Hello, everybody, and welcome to H2O Talk, the podcast that's all about water. And from our Colorado studios of H2O Talk, and we have also Northern Colorado, our annex studio, we have a guest co-host today. So I'm Tom Bellinger, and our guest co-host is Greg Dewey. He is an engineer working for the Northern Colorado Conservancy District. Am I saying that right?
It's Northern Water or Northern Colorado Water Conservancy District.
Yeah, okay. I just had a little mind cramp there, brain cramp.
I'm just a water guy.
So Greg's going to take over for Tom Check. Tom is heading to Italy, but we hope maybe we can connect with him while he's over there and get some Italian news on water. But today we are going to have a couple subjects online. First, we'll start with a little water news, but after that, we're going to talk a little bit about a permit for basically a water supply in Northern Colorado. And after that, we'll touch on a little bit of El Nino, La Nina, and the upcoming winter forecast. So let's go ahead and start with a little water news. Greg, you had something that you wanted to mention.
Yes. So in Northern Colorado, there's a project called the Northern Integrated Supply Project, and it had applied and obtained what's called a 1041 permit from Larimer County to site the reservoir pipelines within Larimer County. There was a legal challenge to that permit, and a decision was issued last month basically upholding the permit and addressing any of the issues that were raised in that challenge.
This is on the Cashtalaputa River?
Yes. So the Cashtalaputa River, which is a tributary to the South Platte, and the Cashtalaputa, many of you know, flows through the city of Fort Collins.
Okay. So your permit, what was the decision of the court right now on that permit?
The decision was that the Larimer County commissioners were correct and followed all of the rules necessary to issue the permit, and there's no reason to overturn that permit at this moment.
Okay. So really no challenge to it, either taking water out of the river and maybe lowering the flows in one portion, but apparently that's not really the case.
Well, that was never really an issue specifically. I think that was always a good thing to send some of the water down the river through the city of Fort Collins. I think at some earlier there were some discussions from not the project proponent, but from others who thought it might be good to send all of the water down the river and then pick it up. But that's not the case. The permit basically allows for about two-thirds of the water to be delivered through a pipe, and then the other remaining third to be delivered through the river, through the city, and then it will be put into a pipe and combined with the other flows to be delivered to the participants in the project.
Okay. Yeah, so, you know, on a lot of projects like this, oftentimes where the point of diversion is problematic for some people. This sounds like this is basically keeping that river whole and probably keeping most people happy with its outcome. This is going to be used for the water? It's going to be used for agriculture mainly?
No, the water is going to be used primarily for municipalities and municipal use. There is a part of the project that is used for agriculture, but that's to trade water supplies to enhance the municipal supplies as well.
So Northern Water really has been pretty busy with a lot of water supply projects, and you guys are looking pretty good for the future.
Yes, I think we talked before, these projects take a long time to plan, permit, authorize, design, finance, construct, it can take decades. And we're at a unique point in time where we have two major projects with three reservoirs kind of coalescing within about 10 years of each other.
And
so you'll see some new reservoirs in northern Colorado soon.
Yeah, and they'll have some recreation benefits, I understand, too.
Yes.
I guess the one thing is, as I worked for, I was on the board at Metro Water Recovery, and one of the things that we were noticing, and this is impacting you, of course, is just how much the northern part of the state, up near Fort Collins and those areas, is growing. And this is what we're facing a lot in the West, is trying to keep these cities whole as they grow, because Colorado has still a lot of people moving in, and we might have double the population in about 30 years in the metro area. I think it's estimated to be about 10 million instead of where we are right now. So any kind of project is helpful, probably.
Yeah, it's ironic. I think when I started in the water business 30 years ago, I had started to hear stories about population doubling in so many years. And that's been a consistent theme over the last 30 years. It's going to double in either, originally it was 50 years, now it's 30 years. And it's just because this is a great place to live, and we all enjoy living here. So it's hard to shut the door and say nobody else can come here since I'm already here.
And I'm a non-native, I'm part of the problem. But you know, I when we were working on the state water plan here a few years back, and I was involved in that, the big elephant in the room was growth. And we were looking at different water projects around the state. You know, one I know we've talked about was potentially bringing water in from Flaming Gorge, and maybe pulling more water from the Western Slope. And that's, you know, those were just discussions. But nobody really would want to talk about the growth situation. And I mean, it's just reality in this part of the world. So, yeah, it's a great place to live. A lot of people move here. And that's why there's a lot of this infrastructure development going on. It's kept you busy.
Yes, it is. But I think it's also important to think about how we use water, and we're always busy trying to find new ways to conserve and use less. And that will continue as well.
Yeah. It's water purveyors have an interesting job where they're trying to convince people not to buy their product and just to conserve, basically. So that's an important factor. And I know Northern Water has a good record with all that.
And I think it's also a public good. I think there's, you know, to have access to a clean, reliable water supply is actually, in my opinion, it's a right. And it's a public good and service. I know there's some parts of the world that don't have that, but I'm very glad to be part of a solution to provide that for people.
Right. And it's often just taken for granted. But that's probably a good thing, that at least we know it's always going to be there. Anything else from your part of the world on that project or things going on?
There's an interesting story I just heard about today. There's a local NPR station, KUNC, and they put out a story today regarding research at the University of Washington.
Oh, okay.
They looked at historical precipitation and temperature data from 2001 to 2022, and they measured it with snow pillows.
Right.
Which is basically like a bathroom. It's like a scale that compresses and measures the weight of the snow.
Yeah.
Well, they looked at how much snow was still on the ground on January 1, and they were able to understand what stuck, you know, from October, November, and December throughout the year. And then compared that to the level of the max amount that fell during the entire season.
Ah, okay.
And they basically found that heavy fall snow levels in October through December, which they measured in January, were good indicators of heavier snow seasons for January through March, primarily in Northeast Utah, Southwest Wyoming, and Northern Colorado.
That's interesting because looking at the it's snow in Colorado, it's always been kind of looked at as it's very hard to predict. But if they're seeing some correlations, that's interesting, especially if we have maybe a heavier winter coming. Oftentimes, and I teach a snow hydrology course, when you're doing the forecasting, there's so many variables. And, you know, only so much data on the ground. And those snow pillows are at what we call snowtell sites. And we have several around in the mountains in Colorado. And oftentimes you really can't get a good feel for what the year's going to look like until you get to late March, or and usually one of the official days is April 1st. So going back to January, they're finding correlations. That's pretty interesting. So,
yeah, it's interesting too. You've probably seen this on maps that we look at for drought monitor. We're always in the spot that's called equal chances. Ah. So equal chances of above or below average precip or temperatures, or so it's really hard to determine. And then another thing we refer to is some water managers, they talk about snow levels and they monitor it throughout the year, but then some people say, well, that really doesn't matter until you get to April 1.
Right. And that's what we've been talking about in the snowfield for quite a while is April 1. And when I teach my class, we go through the season and we can see how it changes, but I'll have to listen to that story. I hadn't heard about that. That's an interesting revelation that might be something that they're finding some good correlations with. Since we're kind of talking water news, with the situation back east, especially New York City, the heavy rains that they're experiencing lately has also been some pretty big news. So it's either too much or too little, I guess, but New York's had some record rainfall. And I know this past spring, friends of mine in Vermont have been saying, oh my gosh, it's just raining here. And a rule of thumb sometimes with climate change is wet areas might get wetter, dry areas might get drier. But yeah, it seems to be kind of at least true in this past year or two with the Northeast.
Yeah, and I think that's a little bit easier to predict than in Colorado because of the way the jet stream dips and then flows east over that air part of the country.
Yeah. So we'll have to just kind of watch that. What we were also going to talk about, and we can maybe just move on to this, is El Nino La Nina, the situation with that. Right now we're going to talk a little bit about what our winter might look like here in the United States. And the first thing I decided to pull up, because we're going to talk about El Nino La Nina, is the good old Farmer's Almanac, which actually has a pretty good record of predicting future weather. I was telling Greg this morning, is the meteorologist, or at least one of them, that writes this forecast is very well known, and I guess has been doing this for a number of years, but does a lot of international work. And what the almanac is predicting is if you look at the United States, and basically you kind of draw a circle that kind of is just inland from the coast, the west coast, the south part of the country, and up part of the eastern coast. Those would be, let's say, the shoreline part of the map. The center part of the map, where you have most of the Midwest and the Western states, they're predicting a cold and snowy winter. And we've been kind of hearing about that through other sources. The Northeast is mild and snowy. Now, the Northeast has had some pretty strong nor'easters, but probably some of this weather, especially if you go out to the coastal areas of California, Washington and Oregon, most of California is looking to be cool and wet, which seems to be an El Nino type of phenomenon. They have mudslides and everything. The mountains could get more snow. And as you move up towards the Pacific Northwest, it's going to be a cold winter probably, but a dry winter. So that's their forecast. And I don't know how much of El Nino La Nina comes into this, but as far as the El Nino advisory that basically came out recently, or the most recent one that I've seen, and I'll just quote here, the warm phase of El Nino Southern Oscillation, or ENSO, climate patterns strengthened across the tropical Pacific Ocean in August of 2023. Odds are that it will last through winter are now higher than 95%, and that I think is fairly expected because El Nino tends to last 12 months or maybe more, and the chance of a strong event is now above 70%. So a strong event means that you have some fairly high temperature differences in the Pacific Ocean. So the strength of the event does not reliably predict the strength of its remote impacts, but it does increase the chances that some impacts will occur in places. And this is kind of, you could say, anecdotal evidence and everything else. But what I'm looking at is basically a map of the Pacific Ocean, and the warm area with El Nino tends to be in the eastern Pacific, along the Central American coast, and especially along like the coast of Peru and Ecuador, and it's fairly warm. That's El Nino. If it's a La Nina event, it would be on the other side of the ocean, more towards Southeast Asia and that area. And we just got through a La Nina event, which was extended out, gosh, I don't know, a year to 2 years, somewhere in there, which was unusual. And now we're seeing the El Nino event, the warming of the Eastern Pacific is happening. And they're showing some differences in average temperature of about 9 degrees, and they're not Fahrenheit, in the Eastern Pacific. So that's going to spell probably a lot of that more rainy, moist weather, especially in California and the west coast of the United States. And I would say the effect tends to fade a little bit, but this also ties into the Pacific jet, the jet stream, and where they go and where some of the setups for weather are during El Nino events. Colorado, though, Greg, is kind of a crapshoot as far as predicting. It's a little bit more difficult, but oftentimes our winters tend to get to be a little snowier under El Nino. And a couple years ago, the last El Nino, we did have a pretty good winter. Now, last year we were coming out of La Nina, we had a pretty good winter. So in some ways, it's hard to tell what's happening, and the mountain ranges probably affect what's going on with that. Have you guys done any kind of forecasting for water supply up in the Fort Collins area? I know you have a hydrologist there.
Yeah, we have our district definitely looks at the different tributaries, as well as along the South Platte, as well as the Colorado River Basin. And all signs are pointing toward an above average year for precip. So higher snowfalls than we've had. And that's going to be a challenge because we just came out of a wet spring and a summer that was a little cooler, that had lower demands. And so a lot of the reservoirs weren't drawn down as much. Some are being drawn down now, actually, as we speak, just so that they have some room for the runoff that's expected.
Wow, okay.
It's going to be a challenge.
Yeah, so, you know, you look at rivers like the Colorado, which has really been low. Maybe this will help the Colorado, but this past year, I know it's helped the Colorado River, but it's not a full recovery. It's going to take a few years, like last year, to really do the job. But you guys are already planning for potential flooding, or at least keeping some space open for extra water coming down.
Yeah, and we'll make sure that we release out of the reservoirs if it does get to that point. There won't be flooding over the top of the reservoirs, I'm sure, but it's something to be watching.
Yeah,
and it's a good thing for the Colorado Basin as a whole.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I haven't really been paying much attention to what's going on in the western part of the country, but this could be maybe an indication that this will be another helpful winter to us, at least in the western U.S. The eastern U.S., not really as much affected by El Nino, a little further away, but I think they are predicting maybe a fair amount of snow back there. So maybe we'll be in a little better shape after a year. And El Nino, I would expect, will go on longer than what they're saying, but I'm not really a meteorologist, so I just play one on TV.
It's working for you.
So with El Nino, gosh, what other effects do you think could be helpful with that? I mean, water supply could increase. Maybe the ski industry will like it.
Yeah, that's definitely good. When you talk about snowpack, I'm thinking also on the West Coast, if it's going to be warmer, but at least they would have maybe some more rains, and that could be good for fire danger, as long as it's not too much that causes flooding.
That's true. You know, it's kind of a two-edged sword with the fire danger, too, is because you have all of this underbrush growing. And yes. I know I was out over at Grand Lake last week, and you could see a lot of the colors on the hill, but you can see all the burned trees above that color. So you see all the burned tree trunks and basically what's left of the trees standing. But underneath, which is very visible because there's no leaves out there now, you can see all this undergrowth coming up. It's all very colorful, but that undergrowth could also mean, if we go into a dry spell, a lot more fuel for fires. So you just kind of hope that maybe the moisture keeps up at a high level for a while and allows that to establish itself, and because that's always kind of a backdrop with some of these wetter years, and then you move into a dry spell. The ebb and flow of the fickle wet weather.
Yes, and I think about, you know, that it seems like I can think of several times where you've seen a cycle where there's been a forest fire, then the ground is either hydrophobic, meaning it won't accept any infiltration and it's easy to run off, or maybe it's just the loss of all that growth, and now what's next? Well, then it's a flood. There's too much water now. So it is an interesting cycle for sure. And I just hope that we can learn to live within those extremes. But this is interesting for El Nino for sure.
Yeah.
We haven't seen El Nino for a while.
Nope, it's been a kind of an extended period. So we'll see how it goes and goes with what the normal forecasts tend to show with El Nino. And I'm glad you brought up the soils, because that's true. They can get so dry they won't accept water. And yep, you have a flooding situation, almost like frozen soil can do. So that's a good point. Well, we're kind of near our time right now. Greg is going to join us for a while and probably occasionally bring him in for other things and discussions. A couple of things we're looking at in the future is maybe we can hear from Tom and do a remote broadcast from our studios in Italy.
That would be great.
I'd like to hear what the Italian people think about some of these issues. And we have a few other guests that we're thinking of bringing in that we can chat with, but I have to just confirm all that. So I appreciate everybody listening in to Greg and I. If you have any questions or suggestions or complaints, please give us an email, h2otalkpodcast@aol.com. We've never received an email, but we do see downloads. So I guess we're doing things okay. But any suggestions or interests or questions, we can always look at too. So I guess that will do it for today. I appreciate you joining me, Greg.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. I can't wait to see what the next few months bring as I stand in for Tom.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you doing that. You've got a lot of knowledge in the field. You've been in it a long time, and that's what we want on the show, is expertise. So thanks for joining me. So everybody, thanks for listening, and we will see you next time. Have a good day.
Goodbye.